Hi, my name is Luca Giotto and you're listening to F2, the road to Formula One.
Hello and welcome to F2, the road to F1, where every fortnight or so we chat to the future stars of Formula One. This week we speak to the enigmatic Italian racing driver Luca Giotto.
But of course, you know, my dream would be to be in F1. This is why I'm here. This is why I'm doing this for 4 years now. We'll see. I mean, I want to finish the season really well, hoping that someone from the other paddock will be watching the races.
Giotto drives for Uni Virtuosi Racing and has already tested for Williams in Formula One. Over the course of this episode, we'll find out exactly how he got into the sport and what his goals are for the future. You're listening to F2, the road to F1. So welcome back to the F2 paddock, where I'm Alex Jakes and I'm joined once again by Rosanna Tennant. Rosanna, good to see you.
I'm still Rosanna Tennant.
Still Rosanna Tennant.
It's great to be back in the paddock. And an exciting episode coming up with Luca Giotto, who I have loved interviewing throughout this season because I always have to hold my breath when he gets out of the car. Even if he's had a good result, I'm always worried that he's going to be down in the dumps. It takes a lot to raise up his spirits.
There's a famous Fry and Laurie sketch from years ago where the racing driver has won and Stephen Fry keeps shouting, "But are you happy? Are you happy?" And I think of that every single time you have to interview Luca, because he's a lovely chap, but he's intense. And of all the drivers I've seen in the years doing the job, he's the one that hangs on to the emotions longer. So if he's up, he gets himself on a real run. If he's down, as he will tell us later on in the podcast, he really struggles to get rid of the negative emotions. And it makes him a driver that you instantly warm to, but it can lead to the sort of season that he's had this year, where the poor races sometimes turn into two rounds when other drivers might condense it into one.
And it's been a nearly but not quite season for him. I'm so looking forward to your interview with him, Alex. But first, here's my scouting report about Luca Giotto. Born in the Italian town of Arzignano, Giotto entered karting in 2008 when he took the title in the KF3 class of the Champions Cup. In 2011, aged 16, he made his debut in single-seaters, taking part in the Formula A-Bath series for Prema Power Team. Giotto remained with Prema as they moved to the 2-litre Formula Renault machinery. For 2013, he had full-time campaigns in both Formula Renault 2.0 Alps and the Eurocup Formula Renault 2.0, where he took a podium at the Castellet as well as a victory at Spa. Luca graduated to the Formula Renault 3.5 series in 2014. In the same year, he also made his debut in the GP3 series, taking pole position ahead of his first race at Spa. Giotto's impressive performances meant he retained his seat with Trident for 2015, taking 5 victories in the season, but eventually losing the title to Esteban Ocon by only 8 points. In February 2016, it was announced that Giotto would be graduating to the GP2 series whilst continuing his collaboration with Trident. In the following 3 seasons, Giotto claimed 2 victories as the championship was renamed Formula 2. Luca opened his 2019 account with victory in Bahrain, while he also claimed victory at Silverstone. In his attempts to step up to Formula One, the Italian tested for Williams following the Hungarian Grand Prix in August 2017. There are a few facts and figures for you about Luca Giotto, but now let's hear the full interview with Alex Jakes.
Luca Giotto, let's go all the way back to 2014 in GP3. It's Spa, and you rock up to the F1 paddock for the first time, and you put it on pole position on debut. That must have been an amazing feeling.
Well, just look how I'm smiling right now.
It's a podcast, people can't tell, Luke.
Yeah, but you can
see. He's smiling right now.
Yeah, it's been like, you know, it's those things that you don't expect. Well, I knew GP3 was a high-level championship, especially that year. I think that Alex Ling was there, and I don't remember who, but so many good drivers.
Yeah.
Probably one of the highest GP3 years of all. Highest level, of course.
Yeah.
And I did not test the car. I didn't know anything about that car until Thursday of that weekend.
Amazing.
And I just went there saying, okay, I'll do it. It's good. I have some mileage in the car. You know, it's...
Yeah.
But I never expect that. I knew that I always liked racing in the wet.
Yep.
So if it's raining, I'm enjoying it a lot, and I've always been good at that, but I even if it was raining on that qualifying, and I would never expect to be on pole.
Yeah, I would say it was an incredible performance in it, and it alerted the world to your talent. Who put you in a go-kart for the first time?
Well, my father, for my birthday, let's say, decided to give me the chance to test a go-kart.
And how old are you at this point?
That was 2007, so I was 12.
Okay.
That was my 12th birthday.
Yeah. So it's not as early as some. Some get thrown in it stupidly early.
Yeah, I don't really know why I started earlier.
Yeah.
Probably because my father was racing at the time.
Right.
And he kept racing until 2009, if I'm not wrong. So I think his mind was so focused on his job, of course, and doing his races that he never had the time to think about giving me the chance, you know. And probably the point where he started to think that maybe he was going to retire, and you know, he didn't have many more years to race. His mind started to think, oh, maybe, why not? Giving the chance to my son
to give you a go.
Yeah.
And when you were given a go, what was the first feeling like?
Well, I remember I was in Lonato, which is one of the most famous kart track in the world, which is really close to my house. It's just half an hour away. And, you know, I remember that we bought everything new, you know, the helmet and everything, because already in karting you have to wear certain things to go. You can't just, you know, buy a bike helmet and go. You know, I had my first helmet. I remember it was a white Arai. I remember it as if I have it here right now. Brand new suit, shoes, everything. We made the seat fit and everything. And I remember the first time I went in, I was a bit... I didn't really know what to do, because there's something that is hard to explain to who doesn't race. But first time you drive in a truck, even us, we're not like good straight away.
Yeah, you don't have it immediately. Yeah. There's things to learn. Yeah. There's racecraft to learn.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about racing lines.
Yeah,
you know,
fine.
How to take a certain corner. So that was quite a, like, thinking about it right now, I would say that was a strange day.
Yeah.
Like, if I have to do it again now, I would say, why I did that. Everything was wrong, but I think that's normal at the end.
Absolutely. Walk us through your path up to GP3.
So, I did 2 years karting in KF3. So, we went, like, full cards on the table, all cards on the table straight away, without even doing any Italian races.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah.
I'm sensing
just
a theme.
Just straight to the European Championship and World Championships, KF3. Then I moved to KF2 for 2010, and that was my last year in karting, and the best one also. I've been I'm not racing karting so much because I was quite tall already.
Yeah.
And it was bad for me with the weight, so... I went to do the license for the car for cars at the beginning of 2011. That was just for testing as a first idea. So I was supposed to do karting plus car testing, but to do the license, of course, we have to do some practical tests. We got to drive F4 and F3.
Okay.
And that was, I think, I beat the record of Vallelunga on the short track with F3.
Fantastic.
So my father said, okay, maybe it's better to move straight up to cars,
okay.
And which is what we did. So then I did 2 years in Formula Abarth, which is Formula 4 right now. Then I moved to Renault 2 liter in 2013, World Series by Renault in 2014, and then GP3. Well, plus the two races of GP3 in 2014, of course.
And cast your mind back, what's your impression like of your ability when you're going into that 2015 season? Because that, I think, was such an interesting season to watch. But are you expecting, I'm gonna contend for the title here?
Well, it's, you know, of course I was pumped up, because after, you know, being on pole the first time and doing a good race also, we did, but we were just unlucky with the strategy because it was raining and then it dried up, so it was a bit of a...
It's a bit of a lottery.
Strange, yeah. But still, you know, we saw that the speed was there. And, you know, I saw so much interest also on Trident's side to have me in the team for 2015. You know, when you see a team being so so interested on you driving one of their cars is really good. You know, you feel really well. Like, you know, well, if there's a reason if they ask me to do that. So I was really happy. And then we also got a chance to bring some people in that I knew. The engineer I had was one I knew from when I was really young, and he knew my father from like in the 1990s.
Right.
And so basically part of my team was like family for me.
Yep. Which makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So we went testing and the pace was there straight away. But you know, you still never know because ART is such a good team, and
yes,
you never know if they put extra fuel, if they are showing their cars straight away, or if they are keeping something for them. So even if we were in front, we were still a bit in doubt of what our pace would have been in Barcelona.
And then you get there, and it is a mighty season for you. Multiple wins, leading the championship for so long. But as you say, ART, near unbeatable in GP3, which we should say for everyone is now Formula 3 now.
Yeah.
Same place on the F1 weekend. And Esteban Ocon kept doing this thing where he kept finishing in second place. He got 9 in a row.
Yeah.
So you're winning all these races and he's constantly in second. It was one of my favourite ever title battles to commentate on. In the end, you just missed out. How tough is it to have a season where you looked for so long the quicker driver, but when it came to the end, he beat you on consistency? How tough was that to take?
Yeah, it's really tough, especially if I think that since round 2, I've been leading the championship until the second last. So, you know, I've been second place in the championship round 1, first all the way, and then second at the end. You know, I would have been more happier to be the other way around, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe to be second all the way, or yeah, like he did.
Always easier to chase.
Yeah, yes, of course. But, you know, there's so many things that I could change, you know, in that year. Because, I don't know, it's we've been, I think, clearly the quickest. I think anyone can say that. But even like in Monza race 1, where we stalled from the pole.
Yeah.
And
it's worth saying that pole position, again in the wet, you're a second quicker than
yeah, that surprised me even more than from the year before. So, but at the same time, then I had the chance to do that sprint race for coming from last to third. That was probably one of the best races I had because, you know, doing recoveries in F2 with a pit stop is one thing, but doing recoveries in GP3 in the sprint race, which is just half an hour.
And you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, that was...
That's a mighty drive.
Yeah.
You seem so in sync with the team, and it was such an impressive performance. Do you think things would have been different for you if you'd won the title that year?
Well, I think it's not a secret that I was talking to Red Bull that year. Everyone knew that. And after Abu Dhabi, we quit. They say we didn't talk anymore about 2016. So, could be. And I don't know, but you know, at the end of the day, even Max Verstappen didn't win any championships before he went to F1. But I think they saw what he was capable of.
Yeah.
Like as a single race, you know, you could see him just winning massively. Maybe he was crashing after, but you see, you know, one race shows you what
the raw talent was there.
Yeah. So if I see it like that, then it's probably that was not the case. But you never know at the end what they are thinking on the F1 paddock. So
it's interesting because on the outside you don't know how much of it is luck, how much of it is timing, how much of it is if you win the championships, they take a different view, do they maybe give you longer to meet their demands? But sometimes it doesn't work that way, and they just broke off the talks immediately.
Yeah. Also, I remember that 2016 there was already Pierre Gasly doing GP2, so probably that's one of the other reasons why he didn't continue talking to me. Maybe for them was enough to have one driver already, and they didn't want to.
And that
to.
Was it. Yeah. Was it frustrating to watch Esteban Ocon then get to Formula One when you felt that you were the faster driver that year?
Well, you know, it's always frustrating because you know you beat him, and you just see him there, and you see people getting excited for what he does in F1. So I just think that, okay, I probably will be able to do the same, but I can't because I have no seat.
Yeah.
but you know, he was already a Mercedes driver that season, so he was already, let's say, under the eye of F1 teams, while I was not. So it was a bit of a different thing, and I don't know, it also felt like a little bit like being so fast with the Trident was good on one side and it was bad on another, because I don't know, it looks like, and I heard voices saying that some people were believing that my car was not legal, which
you get thrown at everyone.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's an FIA, which is the most strict organization in the motorsport world. They'll never let an illegal car go by. And if you remember, they checked everything. Even after the Monza sprint race, they kept me in the car for 10 minutes to download the engine data. So I mean, how can you think that it was illegal?
It's interesting that people's mind goes there, though, because Mick Schumacher had the same thing last year in Formula 3, makes a breakthrough, starts winning races, then suddenly it's like, oh, he must be cheating.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gets thrown around a lot, but, you know, drivers.
You know what's funny? Because when the season I was in GP3, we were fast all the way. One moment we started winning
Switched
races.
It on, yeah. Yeah. And then
so that was, for sure, there was no reason to think about that.
It certainly was a season that made everyone sit up. You graduate GP2 in 2016, still with the Trident team. You win a race that year, but you're competitive throughout. Some incredible drives through the field. You came from the middle of the pack in Germany to finish second on the road. ART and Sorokin too quick that day, but you're ahead of the people like Pierre Gasly on performance alone. And then you move to Russian time. I'm wondering, from your point of view, with hindsight, was it a mistake to go to a team that was built for Artem Markelov to compete?
Well, it's you know, Artem was a great teammate, first of all, and there were no problems inside the team. Let's say we were always working together, working really hard, also with the team. We won the team championship that year, which was a good achievement. For sure, he was there for a long time, because I think when I was there, it was already his fourth year in that team. For sure, the car or the setup he had was really like suited on him.
They had a lot of time to figure it out.
Yes, for sure. But I don't think, you know, it's something that was... I would never think that they were like
favoring
him. You know, it was just a matter of experience he had with the team. And, you know, at the end, each driver has a different driving style and different way of doing stuff. So when you are with this one team for a long time, it just helps a lot. Just to do an example, just look at Nicholas Latifi now. He was dumps for the third year, I think, and now this year is super quick. So I think that, you know, staying with the same team really bring you also the how you talk to the team, that the at the end also how you connect to the people, because you're together for 3 years, it helps a lot.
Understandable that it does. You had some difficulties in qualifying that year. You had some amazing charges through, very consistent in the races, but a home win as well, but a home win after you'd been disqualified from finishing first the previous day.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a winner so irritated as you the day after, because you felt like you'd been robbed the day before.
Yeah, I still think that was a double win.
Yeah.
Because I won.
Because doubles are rare, that's the thing, and you were so quick that weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, I was so angry even after I watched the F1 race, this year's F1 race, and Leclerc did the same thing I did. They cut the first chicane, and I said, okay, now it should have been...
Get a penalty.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he didn't.
No.
I said, why?
So I think that might have had something to do with the color of his car.
Maybe not, but I think that now for some things that the stewards are a bit more open. So I would have liked to have the steward from now that year.
Maybe
I would have kept the win. But yeah, so but still, you know, at the end I won on Sunday and it was so good. So yeah, I just enjoyed it. I don't know, something that happens in our mind, you know, when you are so angry, you just go in the car and
it's just like a total focus.
You just do stuff and you don't even realize. I was P1 and I was like, how? I'm already P1 on Sunday, okay?
Still angry,
yeah.
Still pumped up. Oh, yeah. That's amazing to hear.
I've been very privileged in this job to speak to a lot of drivers. You are very hard on yourself. You set very, very high standards. Is that something you've been able to work on? You've been slightly kinder, slightly more forgiving of when you make mistakes, or are you still very angry if you don't hit the levels that you expect?
Nah, I'm always like that. I mean, I just, to take an example, the last race in Monza, race one, where I came from P13 to second, and without the problem at the pit stop, we probably could have won that. All people were coming to me saying, "Congrats, man! What a race! It was amazing!" And I was so angry. You know, I was like, "I had to win that." You know, yeah. Second is not enough. I was so, you know, I don't know why, but inside me, I'm never happy. I have to do everything perfect, otherwise, I'm not.
You expect to win, and if you don't win, you're annoyed. Even, or was it the context of the championship?
Well, at the end, I still finished in front of Nick, so that was good. And of course, I mean, as you can imagine, the day after that I did that mistake on turn one that I crashed into Nick, I was so angry to myself. You know, I just kept thinking about it for 1 week.
Really?
Yeah. So because wow. You know, at the end I knew I could have had the chance to finish on the podium and just threw it away. But you know, at the end things happen. But you know, it's one thing that I think is the only real thing where I could improve. Because I think
he's letting go of it quicker.
Yeah, and letting go and be more consistent. Because even this year, if we are not up there with Nick on the points, it's just because he scored points in every race. And we have had 4 zeros, I think, 4 weekends.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just that.
Talking of this year then, back in Azerbaijan, you said to me, "I wish I'd had this car against Russell and Norris."
Yeah.
There was such a good feeling at the start of the year. The pace you had in Spain, you were hit on the opening lap of the feature race. The pace after that, you're in another league to everyone else because you came back ferociously through the field. At the start of the year, did you think, well, this is my year?
Yeah, well, clearly I thought, not after testing maybe because Nick and RT were really quick. But when we went to Bahrain, I was surprised by the pace. I was just blown away, to be honest. But okay, qualifying was good, but especially the sprint race, I will remember that for forever because you know basically we did the same as Leclerc did 2 years ago. And I enjoyed a lot that one, and probably Barcelona was even more because Barcelona race one where I had the crash where Boccolacci hit me and then I stopped and I was I think 25 seconds behind the last car, the second last car, and we finished
It's one of those, it only really happens in F2 where I'll look at the timing screen and I'll be like, is this right? Have I read this? Is it the driver? because you were taking so much time out of everyone in the field. That's one of the best drives I've seen because you were clearly happy with the car.
That was crazy also for me. I couldn't believe it either, even if I was driving. I was saying, what? Why? How?
Yeah.
And then, from that moment, unluckily for us, it started to go wrong.
So you had the disqualification in Monaco.
Yep.
And that interrupts the momentum. It coincides with Nick going.
That really did something. I don't know exactly what, but there was something wrong. Of course, we lost the race in the sprint race in Monaco, of course, because you can't overtake there, starting from last.
Yeah.
And then France, I don't know, we had a really bad qualifying, and then we went into the race. We were able to recover. We were P5 from P15. With new tires, we were on the alternative strategies, and then we have the problem with the steering. And I had to retire because then I crashed with the Correa, but I couldn't go fast.
You were struggling anyway at that point.
And then race two was really bad anyway. Basically, it was another 0 weekend, a useless weekend.
So you come back at Silverstone and you win the feature race. I remember we were doing some interviews for a documentary that will be released at the end of the year. We were asked, well, who do you think it's going to be? And I was like, well, Luca's back now. So the pace is up there. I assumed it was going to be you. In the end, I assumed it was going to be you back in the title fight. Why do you think that's just not happened?
Well, I think it's just bad luck because between Austria and Silverstone, we had 2 second places in Austria, which is really good. The win in Silverstone. Race two of Silverstone was going really, really good until the moment we punctured, and we don't even know why. Like people was, I know people that were asking me why you boxed.
Yeah, because you're not trying a strategy.
There were no contact and nothing. I said, yeah, I had a puncture. Which was really strange. And I was running, I was P5 already in race two. So and I was catching up for P3. And again, something out of your control happens. And then we went to Hungary, and even there we were second in qualifying. And I think we finished fourth in race one because maybe we bit wrong strategy. We were stuck behind Aitken for all the race. And race two, okay, was a bit of a strange race. We finished P8, but we had a problem at the start. So at the end of the day, if you take each moment, each session and everything, you see that the pace was always there. It was just other things that didn't work.
And so as we come to the end of the year, we're recording this in Sochi, in the paddock. Do you have regrets about how it's turned out in F2, in the second tier? Because your pace has never been in doubt, and yet you have not managed to take it into the deep into the season.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many things that I regret, because at the end of the day, it's okay, maybe the first year, not, but I think in 2017 and this year, we had the pace to fight for the championship. And especially this year it's been really good. But we were talking about consistency before with GP3, and that year was still quite okay anyway. This year has been so many things going wrong that really I just would change really 75% of the season. I would change if I could go back.
And that's understandable. Yeah. That is understandable how it's turned out. Well, I have to say, I've commentated on every season but the pole in 2014, if you are a Grand Prix weekend. You have provided everyone with so much entertainment, so many storming drives, loads of wins. So don't feel too much in the way of regrets, because there's been quite a lot of wonderful moments in front of the F1 teams as well. Where does your future lie in motorsport?
F1 is tough. That's not a secret. And so far I have no proposal, nothing to go there. After that test I did with Williams in 2017, nothing really happened. So I don't know, I'll be doing two WEC races, WC races, at the end of this season, one straight after this one in Sochi. And that's a good opportunity, so I will try to use that as best as I can. But of course, you know, my dream will be to be in F1. And this is why I'm here. This is why I'm doing this for 4 years now. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I want to finish the season really well, and hoping that someone from the other paddock will be watching the races if I have few good races. And maybe we'll be saying, you know, okay, this guy maybe is good. Just give him a chance. Maybe I could finish second. It's not too far. So let's try to do that. Yeah, I think that would be the key to finish the season well.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time today, and we wish you luck for the rest of the season. And you've always been part of the battle at the front, so well done on your time in Formula 2.
Thank you.
Wow, a very intense interview there with him, Alex. He's so intense. He has so many regrets that he was talking about. That's a real shame, because he's always giving his best. And of course, you can't turn back the time. You just got to focus on the future, which so many of these racing drivers are usually very capable of. That's not to say he's not capable of results on track, but it seems like he needs to harness that mindset and really set himself off on a positive trajectory.
Yeah, he's very open and honest there about not knowing exactly where his plans lie in motorsport. He's rapid. He was a match for Esteban Ocon when he was younger. I think that was defining. And looking back to GP3 in 2015, I think if he'd won that title, rumoured interest confirmed there from Red Bull, it seems strange that you would not take a driver on the basis of an 8-point swing. But I think the fact that he wasn't picked up led to frustration, that he saw other drivers being drafted into these junior driver programs. And think of the advantage. They wouldn't exist unless you got an advantage. And if you're in the Ferrari driver academy, for example, you get a sports psychologist, you get the nutrition looked after. That's not to say that Luca hasn't done that, but it is an advantage when you have that alliance with a team, as we've seen with Charles Leclerc, as we've seen with George Russell in previous years. I think that might have hurt Luca, but what I really respect about that interview is that he was willing to be honest and he was willing to be open. And I think it was a great example of sometimes it doesn't work out. It isn't going to stop him being a professional racing driver, but his road to Formula One, as he suggested, is pretty difficult.
Very keen, though, that we don't end on a downbeat note, so it's time for Luca to face the quickfire questions.
Favourite movie?
John Wick series. 1, 2, 3. John Wick 1, John 1, John Wick 2, and John Wick 3.
Good shout. Favourite book?
I don't read.
Yeah, I don't know why we asked that question.
My favourite book is the track book the team gives me before every weekend.
Favourite activity away from motorsport?
Away from motorsport? Well, I think it's just enjoying my life, you know, going out with friends and have fun.
Funniest person in the F2 paddock?
Funniest?
Funniest.
It's tough. There's so many funny persons around.
Who springs to mind first?
Probably my teammate, Joe. He's crazy.
Favorite racetrack?
Monza.
Closest friend in the F2 paddock?
Well, I think my trainer, probably. He's the only person that really had nothing against, you know, I'm not fighting against. So.
He's the one who's on side. Yeah. If you could invite any three people to a dinner party, who would it be? Any three at all?
Like famous people?
Famous people, your family, so anyone you like.
I'd probably invite... I was thinking about a nice girl, nice actress.
Start nice. Who do you think?
One nice actress, okay? There's so many that I don't have a... I don't have one. Every the first one that comes up. Then I would say Lewis Hamilton, because he will share the secret to me for why he's so fast.
Makes total sense.
And third, an F1 team manager, so maybe I can talk about the deal for the future.
Great stuff, Luca. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
A big grazie to Luca Giotto and the Uni Virtuosi Racing team. F2, the road to F1, will be back soon, but stay up to date with the latest news from the championship via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Of course, you can subscribe and rate the podcast on iTunes or your podcast provider. But now, from me, Rosanna Tennant, and
me, Alex Jakes,
I think it's time for us to say
goodbye.